This is Charlie Bose reading the News Gazette from Friday, February 17th. I'll start with an article on the first page titled, Budget Relief Still Possible, Official Claims. It's by Tom Kasich, Springfield Byline. Governor Bruce Rauner's budget director said Thursday that public universities, community colleges, social services, and other agencies left without funding for half of the current fiscal year might still see relief. A supplemental appropriation of $231.8 million to the University of Illinois is listed in Rauner's 570-page budget book. There's another line item of $136.8 million for the Illinois Community College Board. The funding is dependent upon Rauner and the legislature reaching a balanced budget agreement for the fiscal year that begins July 1, said Budget Director Scott Henry. Under the assumption that we are able to achieve a balanced budget for fiscal year 2018, and that will be in place, then we would be able to open to additional resources to appropriate money in those areas to grant their funding level up to a maintenance level for fiscal year 2017. Maintenance level, Harry said, would be determined by his office and the agency on what their spending needs will be for fiscal year 17 in order for them to continue to administer and operate their core programs and services. Also Thursday, Harry acknowledged that the fiscal 2018 budget has a gap of about $4.6 billion between anticipated revenue and expenditures. Filling the gap, Harry said, could be accomplished by a combination of the grand bargain budget deal being negotiated by Illinois Senate leaders in addition to budget cuts. His preferred option is to make structural changes to grow the economy, to add jobs, and with that, working with the General Assembly, with spending reductions, he would be open to new revenues, he said. Harry insisted the budget is balanced, but Chicago Democrat Senator Heather Steens said, It feels a little bit of punt work is going on here in terms of leaving it to the General Assembly here, the Senate, to get us to the balanced budget. Another article on the first page, headline is Priority of Life. Officers training new tourniquets, vital tools in saving gunshot victim. There's a picture with the caption is, Urbana Police Officer John Frankamont Wright demonstrates one of the department's new tourniquets on Officer Mike Cervantes on Wednesday as Sergeant Matt Rivers looks on at the Urbana Police Department. The officers and the tourniquets played an important role in saving the life of a shooting victim recently. The article is by Natalie Wickman. It's out of Urbana. When faced with a gunshot victim, how do police channel medical practitioners before the ambulance arrives? Urbana Police Sergeant Matt Rivers said the key is to prioritize. Then, prioritize some more. Everything we do is based on priority and the priority of life, Rivers said. And within the victim, we had to prioritize the injuries. Since you're so task-driven in the moment, there's no fear. That strategy and help from recently purchased tourniquets allowed Urbana and Champaign County Sheriff's Office law enforcers to keep alive a man with multiple gunshot wounds before he went to the hospital. Almost a week has passed, and the man is alive and at the hospital in stable condition after surgery. Rivers and Urbana officers Mike Cervantes, John Frankamont, and Matt McKinney, in addition to deputies Jason Moore and Chad Beasley, responded to a call of shots heard on February 11th around 1:30 a.m. in the 1000 block of Austin Drive, according to Police Chief Patrick Connolly. They found an 18-year-old Champaign man who had been shot multiple times in his torso and legs. My blood pressure was through the roof when I heard the call, but luckily Sergeant Rivers and I were together, Frankmont said. With just a year and a half on the force, it was Frankmont's first time experiencing this kind of situation. The adrenaline doesn't go away after you do this so many times, but we're accustomed to shootings now, Cervantes said. When adrenaline goes up, we're thinking tactical approach, getting there safely, scanning as we're going to look for suspects. We're trying to process all this stuff, and then we think about caring for the guy. It didn't help that they were in a dark area. We were all stressed out. It was dark at the end of a cul-de-sac with no street lights, Frankmont said. There was everywhere to hide. They started by doing verbal check-ins with the victim while removing his clothes to find the wounds. He was saying, "I don't want to die. Help me," Rivers said. People can think of officers in situations like this as mechanical because they're so focused on addressing the immediate threat of a problem. Frankamont added, "You've just got to shut those emotional comments out." The victim's legs were damaged, the officer said, so they went in with their tourniquets and put one on each. The Urbana Police Department used federally forfeited drug funds last fall to purchase 60 seventh generation combat application tourniquets for $1,429.20, including shipping, according to Lieutenant Bryant Serafin. They arrived in December, and each officer went through a 20-minute training session with a Metro SWAT medic to learn how to use them. Serafin said the department is now fully outfitted with the devices. Over the course of several shootings over the summer, they started the conversation around this, Serafin said, about tourniquets. The devices are used for penetrating trauma to an extremity. They're applied above a wound by wrapping tight to cut off circulation. The officers said they fastened with Velcro and included a small stick that's wound as tight as possible to continue preventing circulation and blood loss. In addition, Cervantes used occlusive dressing and combat gauze that he buys himself to plug the wounds. The gauze contains a hemostatic agent that absorbs blood. "I've plugged wounds in at least 5 people in the last 5 months. This stuff is big, and I think we need to be issued it," Cervantes said about the gauze. Rivers said the high wire scene was organized chaos with everyone working at a dizzying pace. "We were talking to him, and then he was laying his head back like he was going to sleep," Rivers said. After tourniquet application, he went back up within a few seconds. The officers provided treatment for 5 to 6 minutes before medical personnel arrived, Frankmont said. That once the man arrived at the hospital, his blood pressure had returned to normal, which was incredible, Rivers said. "I think the best compliment was the hospital saying we did a great job. That doesn't really happen, and it was really cool, other than the fact that the guy was going to live." When the action halts and adrenaline wears off, the officers said, there's usually a moment where the situation's magnitude hits them. You don't just go home from a call like this and say, "Meh, work was okay today," Rivers said. "It sticks with you, and you have to find a way to unpack that. I remember when I was brand new, I thought this stuff would never bother me. It never goes away, but you manage it." The officers said the Urbana Police Department has workplace coordinated counseling and peer support calls for officers to speak confidentially with officers from a different department. They can speak about anything affecting them, including post-traumatic stress disorder. Rivers said his profession is addressing mental health better than it used to. Afterward, my emotions are about how senseless this gun violence is, Cervantes said, noting the victim's age. We need to teach kids how to respect their lives and themselves. Continuing with a first page story from the Friday, February 17th News Gazette, is an article with the title, If You're in the Market, local leaders from six area communities delivered their annual State of the Local Housing Market reports Thursday to the Champaign County Association of Realtors. Here's their top selling points. It's by Ben Zigterman. Champaign. The city's Class 1 fire safety rating, the highest the life insurance The insurance services office hands out should lead to lower homeowners' insurance rates, Mayor Deb Finan said. And while November's passage of the Unit 4 referendum will raise taxes, Finan said that more importantly, it will lead to state-of-the-art schools for the city. Mahomet, while the results aren't yet in from Mahomet's recently conducted special census, Village Administrator Patrick Brown expects to see growth, which would mean more state revenues. The village residential growth has been consistent, and Brown said Mahomet is starting to see growth on the commercial side as well. Rantoul. Rantoul's experiencing a new burst of growth, and we can see it on the interstate, Mayor Chuck Smith told the crowd. With recent economic development, a new Holiday Inn Express, a 75-room assisted living facility, and a Jimmy John's, our future looks bright, Smith said. St. Joseph. The village recently entered a new tax increment finance, TIF, district. In the first phase, 64 homes will be built along with condos and assisted living. Coming this summer, the construction of 35 townhouses in St. Joseph's Trinity Acres development, Mayor B.J. Hackler said. Savoy. A recent special census showed Savoy's population has increased by 1,300 people since 2010, which should lead to more money from the state on an annual basis. Savoy has 1,200 residential lots ready to be built on, and 100 new houses are built each year, Village Manager Dick Helton said. Urbana. While property taxes are higher in Urbana, Mayor Laurel Pressing said that if the city wins its Illinois Supreme Court case against Carle Foundation Hospital, property taxes will go down 20%. So that's something to look forward to, Pressing said. Now from the local section. Excuse me, the still in the main section. Healthcare Act revamp vaguely outlined. It's an American Associated Press from Washington. Top House Republicans unveiled a rough sketch of a massive health care overhaul to rank-and-file lawmakers Thursday, but a lack of detailed cost estimates and GOP unity left unresolved the problem that has plagued them for years. What's the party's plan, and can Congress pass it? At the closed-door meeting in the Capitol basement, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Republican of Wisconsin, and other party leaders described a broad vision for voiding much of President Barack Obama's 2010 statute and replacing it with conservative policies. It features a revamped Medicaid program for the poor, tax breaks to help people pay doctor bills, and federally subsidized state pools to assist those with costly medical conditions and in buying insurance. Lawmakers called the ideas options, and many were controversial. One being pushed by Ryan and other leaders would replace the tax increases in Obama's law with new levies on the value of some employer-provided health plans, a political no-fly zone for Republicans averse to tax boosts. You have to legislate with essential sense of political reality, said Representative Tom Cole of Oklahoma, Republican of Oklahoma, who said backing that proposal would set up an ad against you from multiple directions during upcoming elections. The highlights. House Republican leaders shared general descriptions Thursday with rank-and-file lawmakers of how they would propose replacing the Affordable Care Act. Medicaid phases out Obama's expanded Medicaid coverage for more low-income people than 31 states accepted, which is nearly completely financed by federal funds. States could continue covering current beneficiaries for an undefined limited period, but the extra federal money would expire. The 19 states that didn't expand would get additional money. In the future, states could decide to receive Medicaid money based on the fluctuating number of beneficiaries in the state and other health factors, or a lump sum. Obama's individual mandate. Penalty for not buying coverage would end immediately. During transition away from Obama's system of subsidizing most people who buy insurance on online marketplaces, younger people would get slightly bigger subsidies than today, and those for older people might get smaller. Tax credits available for people not covered by employers or government agencies, paid in advance, refundable so people with little or no tax liability would get an IRS check. Higher credit for older people, not based on income. Taxes. All or some of the Obama overhaul's tax increases on high earners, health care companies, and others would be repealed. Taxes could be levied on the value of employer-provided health coverage exceeding $12,000 for individuals, $30,000 for families. Health savings accounts. People could contribute more than current annual limits of $3,400 for individuals, $6,750 for families. High-risk pools. States would get federal money to help people with costly conditions to afford coverage. Medicare proposes no changes. Costs, no estimates provided. Here's another short article on the same page of the News Gazette's main section, Friday, February 17th. Monopoly getting rid of the thimble. It's from Atlantic City, New Jersey. It's an Associated Press. You can still pass Go and collect $200 on the Monopoly board, but you soon won't be able to do it with the thimble game piece. Voters have rejected the thimble, an integral part of the game since being added to Monopoly in 1935. The move is part of a campaign to select the next generation of game pieces. Hashtags, emojis, and even a rubber duck may replace dogs, cats, and hats in an upcoming version. Hasbro Incorporated is holding a worldwide contest to let people choose the 8 tokens to be included in the next generation of the property acquisition game based on the real streets of Atlantic City, New Jersey. Winners will be announced March 19 and will be included in games hitting shelves this August. Now I'm going to the local section. Article titled, Chapin May Try Again for Map Limits. It's by Tom Kasich out of Springfield. Rebuffed three times before by his legislative colleagues, State Senator Chapin Rose said Thursday that he may again try to prohibit state monetary award program grant money from going to students who attend for-profit schools such as DeVry University. The Mahomet Republicans' earlier efforts to block the Illinois Student Assistance Commission from awarding the need-based grants to undergraduate students at proprietary schools were killed. Last year, according to ISAC Executive Director Eric Zarnikow, students attending for-profit schools got about 4% of the $365 million MAP appropriation, or about $11.2 million. Next year's state budget, proposed Wednesday by Governor Bruce Rauner, allocates $401 million for MAP grants. During a Senate Higher Education Committee hearing Thursday, Rose focused on DeVry, which gets about 40% of all the proprietary schools' MAP funding. Is this the same DeVry that has a Federal Trade Commission complaint against it for deceptive practices? Rose asked. In fact, Illinois-based DeVry agreed to a $100 million settlement last year over false advertising claims. At some point in time, this state has to get serious about prioritizing the institutions that it owes, the four-year public universities that it owes, and the community colleges that it owns, to make sure that every kid, no matter where they are or what circumstances they come from, gets aid. We keep siphoning off large sums of money, he said. The repercussions are real, and the public institutions, they give every child a chance. Rose also suggested, though, that MAP-eligible students going to community colleges and public universities should get priority over students attending private universities. ISAC data shows that in the most recent year, $141 million in MAP funds went to students at four-year public universities, $139 million went to students at private, not-for-profit schools, $27 million went to community college students, and $11.2 million went to students at proprietary schools. He asserted that the way MAP funding is distributed creates a discrepancy on behalf of the taxpayers, and that the state is starting to subsidize institutions that aren't in the public mission. Students attending for-profit schools have been eligible for MAP grants since 1998. You think the University of Chicago has enough space or cares to give every child a chance? Heck no, that's not their mission. Their mission is to be an elite institution. Great, they're one of the best. But is that where a kid from Greenup, Illinois gets a chance to go to school, or a kid from the south side of Chicago, or a kid from Palatine who maybe doesn't have an A+ GPA or a 32 ACT? No, it's not. They go to Eastern, Northern, Urbana, UI Chicago, Western, Carbondale, and dang it, if we don't get serious about MAP and how we're subsidizing not just private schools, but $3.7 million for a school that has a Federal Trade Commission complaint against it, give me a break. Zarnikow responded, I think it would be desirable to have MAP recipients go to the University of Chicago. Quite frankly, we look at low-income students, and I would love for them to be able to go to the University of Chicago. If a MAP grant is what makes the difference for them to be admitted and to be able to go, I think that's great. Our perspective is that we don't want to do things to discourage schools from accepting low-income students if they can academically make it there. We want our recipients to go to great schools. Also Thursday, Zarnikow said it would cost the state about $550 million, about $150 million more than the Rauner budget calls for, to award MAP grants at the current award levels to all eligible applicants. About 120,000 low-income students were served by MAP in the last year. It was fully funded. The average MAP award is about $2,700. Now I'll read a couple of shorter articles, one or two shorter articles, to round out this half hour of the reading. DePaul taps first lay president in 119-year history. It's out of Chicago, Associated Press. DePaul University has named its first lay president in the Chicago school's 119-year history. The Catholic University on Thursday announced that A. Gabriel Esteban will be its 12th president as of July 1. He is currently president at Seton Hall University in South Orange, New Jersey, where he has held the post since 2011. He previously was provost and interim president at Seton Hall. DePaul's trustees approved Esteban's appointment February 6th. Esteban replaces the Reverend Dennis Holtschneider, who announced he was stepping down in June 2016. Esteban was born and raised in the Philippines. He previously held positions at the University of Central Arkansas and Arkansas Tech University. Now from the history section on page 2 of the main section, area history. In 1917, the Champaign Daily News reported that the proposed commission form of government in Champaign gives women full suffrage in city politics. It means a better government, morally, civically, and financially, the newspaper said. Under this form, no amount of graft or political partisanship can elect a man. He is elected on his own merits, and if he does not fulfill the trust reposed in him, he can be removed and someone else elected to fill the place. In 1967, Smiley Burnett, an East Central Illinois native who started his career as a one-man show in Tuscola and had become a star on the Petticoat Junction TV show, died of leukemia at 55. He was born at Summer, but as a minister's son, he changed homes quickly and grew up in Villa Grove, Arcola, Monticello, Tuscola, and Champaign. He got his start in radio at the age of 16 on Tuscola radio station WDZ. In 2002, number 18 Illinois won its fourth straight game and boosted its record to 19-7 with a 75-65 win over Seton Hall in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Brian Cook led the Illini with 23 points and 15 rebounds. Today's international history highlight. On February 17, 1947, the Voice of America began broadcasting in Russian to the Soviet Union. On this date in 1863, the International Red Cross was founded in Geneva. That finishes the first half of the News Gazette for Friday, February 17th.